This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris. Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, Karen, my friend.
Hello, Chris, my friend. Arguing already?
Yes. Wait a minute. You're my friend.
No, mine.
I did the usual this past weekend and went to a four-day desert rave.
Oh, you know, standard
you know
stuff
me.
For Chris.
My
you know
love of electronic music and camping. I had so much fun. I seriously went. I was doing stand-up in the comedy venue at this electronic music festival, and I'm not a huge fan of DJ-type music, or I thought I wasn't.
And until those drugs kicked in, and then boom.
You do make a valid point. but it was everyone was in a good mood. It was like if you grew up going to rock, punk rock and metal shows, people aren't like spreading love with their vibes.
Well, it's a different agenda.
Yeah.
Feels
and
like
there was a lake, so I was able to bring a bar of soap and wash myself off in a lake. So it was
really. And were you wearing a barrel the whole weekend, or kind of lifestyle is this?
Yeah, but a small one around my neck, like a Saint Bernard.
to rescue other tweakers as they freaked out on
exactly.
EDM.
I would just bark at the cops, and there were police there. People just doing light drop, like it wasn't a rowdy powder festival. It was like everyone was very irie.
Was one pill 6 hours before type of
right.
festival.
And yeah. I loved the music. It was I did not know I'd enjoy it so much.
Hum one song.
But there
Literally.
Were cops.
I mean, you love the music.
I did.
Give me the hook on one of those songs that you heard this weekend.
What's that?
I'm being like a music asshole. It's like, name one song off that album.
I know.
Or it's like, name the tune of any song the entire weekend.
Right. I don't know why my whole life I've been offended by music that doesn't have lyrics or something.
Beginnings or ends?
Right. Really? There is no beginning or end. They are all linked together. There is
right?
no break.
It's just peaks and valleys within.
And I loved it. And there was cops that were all very typical mustached sheriff people, and I eavesdropped as I walked past them, and they were just like, "This is actually just everyone's in a good mood," and the other cop was like, "Yeah, this is actually pretty cool," And one of them was like bumping his head. That's something I needed to see for some reason.
Then the first one said, I feel like I don't want to kill people at basic traffic stops anymore. Could this be the solution? EDM this whole time has been the hiding in plain sight solution for police violence.
I felt like they were all confronted in that sweet way. But
meanwhile, you're not wearing a shirt and you have daisies painted on your chest.
Oh my God. I bought animal ears.
What is happening?
Because I brought regular clothes and I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to dress like an animal. It was just adults playing like kids. So I got these fuzzy animal ears and I wore them all weekend. I was not going to let you know about that.
Sorry, what? Please, you've just given me the gift of a lifetime. What animal, may I ask? Well, there's so many.
It was kind of,
should I guess?
A zebra bucket hat with cow ears. So kind of a hybrid.
It is happening.
Hybrid
within the hat.
Yeah, both were black and white. So I just kind of morphed those animals. And,
sure.
It was terrific. I just had a good time. I'm still feeling great.
Irie
vibes.
Did you... And sorry, because we have to introduce our guest.
We will.
This can't
we
go
will.
On forever, but and we will absolutely get her take. But can I just ask super quick?
Yes.
Did you participate in the moment where a DJ played a song and it was like repeating intense beats, right? Until he brings it up to the point and then there's a silence.
Uh-huh.
And then he drops that beat and everyone goes berserk.
That is when I would woo and start dancing and hug the person next to me. A stranger that was in all vinyl and on stilts. There was a lot of industrial. I loved it. I was hugging people. I mean.
You were knocking people off their stilts, thinking you were giving love and actually killing some circus performers.
But they would have said thank you. That was the kind of vibe. It was downright therapeutic. I just feel worried for all the... There were ground squirrels there. I couldn't stop... The whole field, it was a giant campground with a lake, but in the desert. But there was little holes. I thought I was going to roll my ankle in one of these gopher holes, but they were little squirrels. So it's been serene and silent there for years. And then all of a sudden, this bass and human... Like thousands of humans and bass penetrating the ground... They had to be freaking out.
Yes.
I was a little worried that they were just huddled and shaking. But I did like to think there was like one gopher that was like the one from Caddyshack that was like above ground wearing sunglasses. Totally into it. That was
going
my
like,
dream.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you guys gotta get over it. Get up here.
Yeah, below ground, it was like the beginning of Watership Down, or I guess the middle of Watership Down. Like total animal trauma, but then above ground, if you could just get up there.
Yeah.
Great stuff was happening for
gophers and squirrels. By the fourth day, there were squirrels everywhere that were like, it's not that bad.
Tapping your arm for drugs. Okay, let's see for real.
I had to tell you.
I
love
it.
That's why I'm in a good mood.
I'm so happy. This is what we need. These are the uplift stories that we need right now.
I was nervous to tell you for some reason. I'm a raver now.
It's hard to come out of the closet.
It really is.
As a raver.
My whole life. I refuse to go to a field and have fun. Look at me now.
But a true believer. This is just like you in golf, but just a little more drugs.
Yeah.
Just exactly a half a teaspoon more. Okay. Our guest today is one of the great stand-up comics of our time. She plays clubs and colleges all over.
So many colleges.
And these clubs. Please welcome Allison Leiby.
Hi. Yay. Oh my God. This is, I'm so full of questions already.
Good.
Shoot like five at Chris right now. What do you got?
What did you eat and when? That's always my question. Anytime there's like a large all weekend outdoor event, I'm like, what were the meal or snack breaks and what were you eating? Was it refrigerated? Was like, what was happening from a fiber standpoint? Like bathrooms, I know. Like, it's just, it's all I think about every time I see anything.
Everything, every part of that question, including the fiber, was my first concern.
Okay.
On my way up there, I took a, you know, a COVID test in the parking lot of REI. I went inside. And I bought a backpack that is a fancy cooler. And I bought way too many groceries. I brought sandwich
stuff. I think that's better than the alternative.
Yeah. And the ice, of course, kept melting. So I kept buying $10 bags of ice up there. And it would immediately melt. But I did make all my meals in my tent, which I couldn't stand up in. So I kind of lay on my new air mattress and just make a sandwich on my chest and fell asleep with a couple sandwiches in my hand. But yeah, I brought a lot of fruit and sandwiches and it all kind of went bad in my cooler backpack. So it was, difficult. It was a difficult balance.
I always want something that's been refrigerated, like from my snack. I like hummus. I like crackers. I like fruit.
I brought hummus.
You know?
I brought Triscuits.
Those things require refrigeration. So it feels like in the middle of the desert. And also, did you have to buy an entire camping setup just for this? Or did they provide you anything?
Sort of. No, no. Okay. They provide you with nothing but vibes. I had a tent. And I had a backpack, but I kind of had to buy everything else. I got a chair that I could lounge in.
Smart.
I got a very, very comfortable mattress that had like memory foam in it and you blow into it. That was great. I kind of like camping now. Like if it's comfortable and there's a lake to, you know, we all have fear of sand being in our crevasses.
Sure. Yeah.
I just bought a bunch of stuff and brought a bunch of food, but I threw away more than half of it because of the ice.
Quick follow-up question.
Yes.
Working in tandem with Allison in this interview.
Sure.
I also am very obsessed with being in a situation like that and the bathrooms. Was it porta potties? Was it nightmarish?
Every other version of this festival called Desert Hearts was porta potties. This was the same number of porta potties and an overpopulation of brick and mortar restrooms with flush toilets and outside of them, those kind of beach showers. And some people were getting naked in those and no one was staring. There was some nudity morning. I'm like, oh, there's a naked shower. That's how the world should be. And my tent was very within a 1 minute walk from a perfect bathroom.
Oh, that's terrific.
That's great news for us.
I know. I'm going to constantly worried about bathrooms.
Any other questions I could talk you two into this festival?
Well, what convinced you to go in terms of never having gone to a thing like that before? And then what was your favorite part? I'm very interested in this actually.
I am too.
I was going just to do stand-up, and I thought, what a fun audience this will be if they're on hallucinogens, and I can do my material that just demands someone imagine something. I felt like this audience will be able to imagine these bits I have. And then once I was there, I was like, oh, the show was the last thing I cared about. I had so much fun. And the music, there was art there. There was theatrics, like everyone that worked there was in some sort of character. Everyone was playing. And it's usually from a distance I would judge situations like this where people are that carefree and playing. And I loved it. That's what I didn't expect. Is that what you asked me?
It is.
I went to do shows and the thing I enjoyed the most was the attitude of everyone feeling super comfortable in their skin, and the artwork there was amazing, like all these tents with art in them and live painting. I was blown away. It was a talented group of people.
Did people come see comedy at it?
Not really.
Because I always think about those festivals, and I'm like, of all of the, you know, events that you have access to, in my mind, comedy is like the least interesting one.
Yeah, as I know.
So I'm just wondering if, or was it just kind of like a one and like, was it like multiple stages and people really had to make that choice? Or was it like, this is kind of what's happening from 3 to 4. So I guess we'll do it.
It was at 2 and 4. Yeah. And the sun was at its peak hottest. And I was meanwhile, there's a stage where people are watching waist deep from a nice cool lake. It's like, hey, do you want to come to this hot? There was like a saloon where people were doing old-timey saloon characters, and that's where the comedy was happening. And there was no roof. There was just like slats for what could have been a roof, but the sun was just beaming down. So I didn't have the heart to invite anyone to the stand-up. I'm like, but people did wander that way.
And was it just you? Or were there other comics?
There were other comics. Alex Hooper, Drennan Davis. Do you know Scout? What's her last name? She was so funny. That's my new.
Did she play a ukulele?
Yes, and she's one of the funniest people I've ever hung out. I felt like I've known her forever.
She did that last Bridgetown. She was on Bridgetown when we did it that last time.
Yes, I have to know her last name now. Otherwise, okay, talk amongst yourselves because I'm so embarrassed.
Is it like Durwood? No.
Yeah, thank you. Scout Durwood.
Right, okay. And I also know a dog named Scout, and I was like, well, now I'm just thinking of that dog. But I do know who she is, and she's very funny.
She's playing a ukulele.
Like, yeah, Drennan and Scout, and Alex Hooper was the one that invited us. And the invitation kind of came out of nowhere at the last minute. And all we did is walk around and tell stories and laugh until we were falling on the ground. It was just, that's something I haven't done for a couple of years.
Like, yes, I think that's a dream scenario. But are you comfortable telling us what drugs you took?
Oh, sure. Hey, you listening, family? I had a chocolate bar of mushrooms. Chocolate bar. You can't taste the mushrooms.
I see.
A chocolate bar of mushrooms. Gross.
Just portobellos.
Mixed with chocolate. Everyone's favorite combo.
I'm just kind of chewing on it and crying. I don't know why I have to eat this.
So I had a little tiny doses of that throughout the weekend, and then, you know, I brought a little marijuana and I did a dissolved capsule of ketamine, which is a, you know, a horse. I thought it was a cat tranquilizer. Apparently it's a horse trank. Like Elvis used to take. But I swear, and you can judge me, I swear it was like a therapeutic. Like, I figured some stuff out in my head, and my vision got better. I'm like, oh, my eyes work again.
Is ketamine used for therapy? Yeah, yes.
Karen knows I've been complaining about, look at these ridiculous glasses. It fixed my eyeballs. And it is, yes, Allison, it's used for therapy and having tiny doses of it. I was like, oh, I get it. I wanted to call my family and have conversations with them in those moments.
That's good.
Whereas most drugs, you're like, the last thing I want to do is talk to my dad right now. It was very therapeutic. That's it. Those are the drugs.
I like it. That's a nice mix.
Thank you. I got a little nervous. I'm not that open with my drug use.
But Allison, what if we all did this? Allison, what's the last... what would they call it? Like a class C felony level drug you've done.
I guess. I mean, I smoke weed, but that's legal here as well as in California right now. I guess it would be like cocaine.
Yeah.
Probably. Like, right. And or I had some like mushroom chocolates on New Year's of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And which is great, right?
I'm mostly a marijuana gal.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't really stray far outside of stuff I can order in the form of a sorbet, which is my new favorite consumption method.
Really?
Pot sorbet. That's amazing.
One of my services like does a bunch of edibles, and they started doing sorbets, and they kind of like hit you faster than like a regular edible. It's more like a drink almost, but they're like delicious. I get like the watermelon mint. It's really good.
Wow, that does sound good.
Yeah, it almost sounds dangerous, like for a drug to be delicious. And
I know. I have to keep like a regular sorbet on hand for like after, because I'm like, oh, I could just like keep eating sorbet. And then it's like, this is 100 milligrams.
It's like, almost like saves you that it eventually melts and you have to put it away.
Right. But I would just drink it.
Yeah,
of course. What about you, Karen?
Yeah.
Well, I have epilepsy, so I can't do the drugs I used to do. So I haven't done a serious drug aside from weed in a really long time. And when I was in my 20s and we were doing stuff like mushrooms and stuff, acid or whatever, I'd do each one once, maybe twice, and I'd be like, that's enough being out of control for me. I am like a deep down control freak where my mind kind of won't allow. Like, we did acid once and then hosted a Christmas party. And so many people were like, you were on acid? I just thought your eyes looked really pretty. Because like, my pupils were like this big. I was opening the door like, welcome, everyone.
Anime
I was wearing
style.
A silver dress. Yeah, I was like out of my mind. But there's part of me that like will never let go, it feels like. So I really love that people are like really testing out the micro versions of things and kind of like, what's the benefit of, you don't have to be tripping so hard that you have to call an ambulance to benefit. And like the idea that that's how people are doing it these days makes me really happy, because it was almost like we did mushrooms. The first time we did mushrooms, my friend basically gave all of us too many, and we spent, and I've told this story so many times, Chris knows, but we spent 8 straight hours laughing and crying alternately as we moved throughout our apartment in San Francisco. And by the time we got to the front room, it was like literally 8 hours later, we were exhausted and dehydrated because we cried out all the liquid in our body. And all we could do was like order a pizza and watch The Godfather at the end. We were exhausted and we hadn't done anything. We were literally just laughing our asses off and then sobbing hysterically for a day.
I was watching Scout perform in the hot saloon, and I was laughing so hard that I started tearing up, and then I just was crying. I was crying.
It's
like
a smooth transition.
Yeah, it was
just
smooth.
Just go with it.
I kept smiling, but it looked like my eyes were very sad. That's so funny. I wasn't going to blame the drugs, and there we go. Yeah.
That's how they hit you, right? I think. Yeah. Did you, when Allison, when you did a little bit of mushrooms, did you have any kind of did you hallucinate? Did you have emotional waves? Like, what was your experience?
Recent time was just like a very, very low dose, like micro dosing, basically. Yeah. Just like in addition to like smoking weed and drinking champagne and like whatever. So there was kind of nothing. That whole night's a blur anyway. But like, I mean, it's been, I am not someone who has enjoyed tripping in general. So it was a long, I mean, really, it was like college in my early 20s was the last time I really like tripped and like really did more than what would be considered a micro dose.
Right.
And I was just I'm a control freak. I'm also like, I'm a drinking gal. I like drinking. That's kind of like my comfort zone.
Yeah,
I
mean, so
I like to just stay in the waters that I know.
And drink them.
And drink them.
Yeah. And this festival, there was a bar there at like a long, well done saloon style bar, but no one was really drinking. This was not a drinking festival. So no one was like getting mad or emotional. It made me realize like, oh, booze is maybe the worst drug. The one I prefer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
No question. There was
all this micro use of hallucinogen, it just makes everyone in a good mood. I was just in a good mood the whole time. If you have a little bit,
that.
You're like, oh, I'm happy and I don't know why. I love it. I love it.
I love that. I love it. And I love seeing, I've seen a couple, like, because there was a Steve Aoki pizza, which made me laugh, but I was like, I only kind of know who that is a little bit. I should watch his videos. And watching, like, it's essentially like watching 2,000 really good-looking 24-year-olds jump up and down at the same time and like be like, life is great, majority white. It's just the weirdest thing that has nothing to do with any part of my life. It's so new to me as a old Gen Xer kind of thing, where it's just like, I don't think I'll ever do it. It would be cool, but I also, I think it's just for other generations.
Yeah, yeah. I was worried I would be the oldest person at this thing, and it was all 40-something. There was old people there. I was very surprised that it was not a Coachella-type crowd.
Yeah. But overall, I'm just like beyond standing around. That's like just not part of my life anymore.
Right.
It's just that, like, no matter how much I'm down to like microdose ketamine and like try and experience music in a different way, I'm like, I just don't want to stand for an hour and a half as a minimum.
At this thing, we were just wandering to look at the different displays, like art installations the whole time.
I don't even like going to museums.
Yeah.
Just walking around looking at stuff. I could be at home.
What about a museum where the art isn't in any way as good and the sun's on you the whole time? What about that?
Oh, well, now I'm really interested. Could I also be dehydrated and dirty? I would love a museum the style of like the conveyor belt sushi. Like I stay in one place and the art comes to me and I decide dim sum style what I would like to participate in.
That's... Yeah, and then you just turn your face away if you don't like something.
No,
just
sorry, Chagall.
Goodbye.
I don't know why Chagall.
Fuck you, water lilies. I'm not paying attention.
Fuck you, water lilies.
Because, you know, well, also I think, and this is a thing that I have a hard time, if I didn't have a brain disorder, I would absolutely try something like this just in that way of like, I absolutely believe and love the idea, Chris, of what you're saying, which is a brand new experience that actually allowed you to enjoy it. There was no, they made sure the trappings of things that bum you out when you're on drugs kind of aren't around in that way. And the vibes are right. I mean, like it reminds me of, again, talking about comedy festivals, but that idea that like this kind of perfectly catered to my world hang where, and it is like, it's indoors, it's at night, there's water and pizza, there's real funny people standing around having a good time. Like for me, the sun can't be involved, dirt, like a constancy of dirt can't be involved.
Agreed.
Needing to be exposed physically can't be involved. Right. There's a lot of rules with me.
Yes.
Or just like, if I was the kind of girl that could throw on a bikini top and some jean shorts and like go to the desert, it would be a different story for me. But I'm not.
And I wasn't really thriving until the sun went down. And then it felt good, like those, like Bridgetown and those festivals felt that night. But during the day, I did a lot of like, struggling, going to my hot tent, waiting for the sun to go down.
Did a lot of struggling.
Which is probably part of the victory at the end, right?
You need to. It's a journey.
Yeah, I tried just walking around with electrical tape X's on my nips, but I just, I went back to the tent. I'm like, this is not feeling good.
And the zebra cow bucket hat provided no protection from the sun.
It
tripled the heat, actually.
It traps all of it in your head.
It kept my forehead from getting burnt, yes.
Important. Very important.
Yes. Just that section.
I love this story because I had a friend who just told me about going camping and being in the desert and experiencing some kind of creepy racist people that were like shooting guns and with Confederate flag things. So to me, in this current reality that we're in, and the difficulty level we are playing at on a 24/7 basis, this idea that there people are making a very conscious effort to do things like that actually brings me great solace and relief.
Yeah.
Because I think people, especially like not just 20 beautiful 24-year-olds, but mediocre 52-year-olds need that kind of need that experience.
Yeah, there was no one like that at this festival. And if they were, they were cosplaying like they weren't that person. And convincingly, like everyone was. And in the middle of the night, I saw a bird with an 8-foot wingspan fly out of a tree. No. And that was sort of a religious experiment. So many great things. I loved it.
No birds of prey for you, Allison?
I'm not into birds. Can I relay like a horrifying story to you about birds right now? I have like many horrifying stories that I like talk about with birds, but there's just one that's pretty recent. I I live in New York and I have a terrace. That's the whole thing. It's like horrifying. Ah, no. so I have so like a little, it's I have so like a high little, up. little terrace out there. So I have like a big glass door and a big glass window that like goes out to it. And behind my apartment, there's this giant tree that a lot of birds like to live in. I came home, I like ran out, got coffee and came back one day. There was a huge oily mark of a bird had hit my door. It was like you could make out the feathers. Okay, birds are an oily, disgusting monsters. It was like, and you could see like every feather, and it was like wings were out, and then like it kind of like I think it kind of like shit itself on it, like, the door.
On impact.
And like I didn't see like a dead bird anywhere, so I think it like survived and flew away. And I was just like, oh my God, this is like obviously that's a horrifying thing. And I was like, I'm so glad I wasn't home when it happened. And then like a week later, I was sitting on my couch and like my window was slightly ajar, and like it's one that opens like in like on a hinge, like instead of up or down. And I was just sitting watching TV and all of a sudden I saw a bird like flying directly and it hit the window and like flew away. And the scream I let out, it wasn't even like the shriek that you would expect in a moment of terror. Like it was this like, eh! And then I just started yelling, fuck, fuck, fuck. And it like, it flew away and it was fine, I think. But I just, so I bought a plastic owl and now that's out there.
Smart.
And some sparkly pinwheels to go in my plants. And I was like, that's supposed to help. But
yeah,
the tree is blooming again, hence like the sound of my voice and my allergies going crazy. And I'm just like it, living in terror that they're plotting something over there.
They are.
They are.
City birds? Hell yeah.
City birds. They're so gross. Like, yeah, no. No thanks. Are you guys bird people?
I don't think I'm a bird person. I do appreciate when there's the largest bird I've ever seen.
Yes.
In a tree. And maybe it was a raven. It was by himself. This was at like 2 a.m. too. It was so dark. And so I like mysterious birds. But yeah, I'm not like my mom was a bird watcher. She like had them memorized and would go with her friends and they had binoculars. Like it was.
I respect that so much more than the people who are like, I'll put this one in my house. Like those are.
Yeah. For they're not 30 pets. Years.
That was going to be my point is I think that's the line of demarcation is no birds in the house because they're also like folklore wise, it's bad luck to have birds in your house.
Of course,
so
it must be
the idea that the print was on the outside. That's great. Because that bird, like, there's no...
Yeah, it wasn't trying to escape because I had it here.
It wasn't, you weren't trying to make it your pet. And it's like, the point of birds is they get to go do a thing we can't do. Like, keeping them in our house to fucking sit around and watch Netflix is kind of shitty if you think about it.
No, it's terrible. It's, I would say inhumane, but in avian? I don't know. But it's anti-bird.
it's directly anti-bird, for sure, for sure. Also, I think, like, city birds, you know what I mean? Like, you're getting a lot of pigeon. You're getting a lot of, like, kind of aggro, dirty birds.
Aggro, so dirty
oily.
Birds.
Oily. Don't forget oily.
Oily is the just greatest. Just blown away by how oily it was. Just a greasy,
oily.
It looks like kind of, you know, when you wake up sometimes in the morning and you put on, like, too much, like, face stuff the night before, like, too much serum and oil.
So
and you're
much
just like,
serum.
I got to wash this pillowcase tonight. Like, it kind of had that vibe to it. Yuck.
Yeah. City birds. How is New York right now? How are things?
It's interesting. We've got a new shitty mayor. And
God. That guy.
He's bring that swag all over the streets, doing nothing. And I'm, you know, thriving in my glass house of birds.
And you are currently doing a one-woman show about abortion, aren't you?
About abortion. What a smooth transition
right
into
it. Right? I mean, let's dive.
Let's just do it.
Why not?
I am doing my one, I hate the phrase one woman show, even though like there's nothing wrong with it. That's my own like personal bias, show.
It's very 1994.
Yeah. I imagine I should be like in a black box theater smoking in a beret or something like that. And that's like not what it is. Though in a perfect world, that's what it would be.
You'd be, it's the whole, I think there's a David Tell joke of standing on a ladder. Standing on a ladder.
But I started writing it a couple years ago, and it's just about my experience of having an abortion and a late in life abortion at that, at 35. And, you know, and then yesterday the news broke that that right is going to be gone. And yep. It has been an intense 24 hours.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Ugh. But yeah, at the Cherry Lane Theater, which is like New York's oldest off-Broadway theater. And it's been the home of so many like brilliant, great people. And then I'm up there and I'm like, my abortion just feels psychotic, but is wonderful and like a treat to be there.
Well, I bet you it like in a time like this, it hopefully what I would hope is that people are going to go watch it for the very reason of this is a thing we never discuss. This is a thing that's supposed to be a woman's problem. This is that thing that's like, let them deal with it. Meanwhile, right. Men are the cause, men are half of it. They're yes. fucking getting away with, you know, like just not participating in this at all. It's totally ridiculous. So I love that, you know, it's like not easy, I'm sure, to continue a conversation people don't necessarily want to have.
Yeah.
But I bet you they will start to want to.
Yeah. I mean, like the whole like kind of conceit of the show is I only really talk about my abortion for like 8 minutes of the hour, which is about how long it takes to have an abortion. But it's more just about like what it's like to be a woman and how we conflate like motherhood and female identity. And like you're either a mother or you're not a mother. And like men don't have to live under that binary. But it's, you know, the call to action of it at all is just like, hey, we should talk about abortion more. Cause like I was an activist for many years and had no idea like what it entailed until I had one. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, it'd be cool information to have had. And like what friends of mine, oh my God. Ah. Lost a headphone. just like gesturing too much. My one woman showness coming out. Me
they
over
told
here.
You. Allison, big hands and arms. Let him see you in the back row.
But the whole thing, the whole point of the show is like, I'm not telling you to go do anything except for like, just talk about abortion more or ask questions or talk about this show or talk about yours, talk about someone's like, and that's still the thrust of the show. And everybody's like, are you going to change it, you know, to be more political? And I'm like, it's already inherently very political.
Right. Yeah, you were being political when no one was being political.
Yeah.
So yeah, you don't have to change anything.
Yeah, I'm like, it's already a show about abortion. I think it's like pretty on topic for what we're doing here.
Don't worry about it.
I think that, so there was like some guy, some like right-wing guy who called himself a playwright, wrote like a response play to it.
But to your show?
Yeah, but he like purchased a ticket and came and saw it, like him and his wife or a partner or something like that. And I'm like, well, you already like gave me the money. Like, I don't know what you... So he wanted to like put up... I saw this on... I had no idea. My publicist told me, and then like Fox News like ran a little story online. But he like was doing some play that's supposed to be like the truth about abortion. And it's just the incredibly gruesome court transcripts from like... a guy who performed abortions, but like was doing some not great stuff. And so he just like, the play was just reading these like really gruesome transcripts and the theater was like, oh yeah, no, we're not doing this. Like this is not safe. This is not. And now he's like claiming censorship and all this stuff.
Oh, of God. Course.
But he like bought tickets to mine. I was like, okay. Like, I'll take your cash, bro.
Hell yes.
And did he say he wrote his play as a response to your show?
I think that the intention, I don't know if he didn't write it like after he had seen it, just because
that
was like
right. That would scare
me. But I think it's, I know, it's like you went home and like wrote something.
Oh,
but I think he knew it was like, obviously it had been publicized before I opened the show. So I think he like saw it was coming and was like, I'm going to do the other side, the right side to this. And it's like, actually you can't. It's like horrific and no one wants to see that.
Well, and also it's just this very narrow propaganda service to a thing that's not actually addressing what the point of this medical procedure is about, is
right.
for. And it's actually that thing of that idea where it's like, well, you can keep on talking about, it's this is like, of course, a Twitter quote that I read this morning.
Yes,
so now I'm the expert on
this. Yes, of course.
You know how it all works. But it was that thing of like speaking for the unborn is the easiest way yes. to pretend to be a Christian. Because they don't talk back. You can use them any way you want. And meanwhile, right. there's all kinds of people who need your help who are actually people and you never engage with that. And you
yes.
actually have Yeah. Or just the simplicity of like, once that baby's born, those Republicans are like, no fucking help, no services, yep, no childcare, women don't make money. Like the whole thing is such a fucking scam.
Yeah. You don't even get time off to have the baby from your job. Like you have to be at work.
Unless you have the best job or, you know, your job unionizes and you have.
Right. Which you probably got because of other privilege. So it's just, it's a cool cycle that we've built into our culture. But this guy complained that I didn't talk about abortion enough in the show.
Really?
The guy who wrote the other.
Hey, that's funny, but he's like, fucking critic.
He's like, it's just anecdotal. She doesn't talk about it at all. And I'm like, aren't you mad? Like, isn't that the thing that you should be happy about? That it like doesn't have more
abortion in it? He wanted to hear the gruesome medical details. That's what he likes to sink his teeth into.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Gross.
Just, like, well, also, so crazy.
They're actually also trying to regulate how you do your abortion story personally.
Yes. No, right.
All of it needs to be controlled.
Police the creative body. Yeah.
You fucking piece of shit.
That was so good, police. And you've been doing it. You're in like your, you've been doing it several weeks now, right? You're not even
halfway. I'm in the middle of week two.
Oh, wow.
So really still like, I knew that like we were going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I think we all know that that was like, that's the decision that's coming. And I was just like, well, that'll happen in June and maybe it'll still be running or maybe not. Like I might have to kind of address that or deal with it. And then like the eighth show, it like happened. And I was like, God damn it. Like I can't not acknowledge like the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, I wrote this thing and I spent a really long time writing it. I want to keep doing it the way I would like to.
Has the show changed as because of that or just?
Not yet. It's only really been one performance so far that has happened in this light. But if anything, I think it kind of drives home that it's like on the right course because it's just this kind of like gentle personal story. And, you know, with Roe v. Wade overturning, there is like, I do talk about my mom and her relationship to abortion. And that's kind of like the twist of the show. And it is relevant to the news, sadly.
What an important time to be doing this show. Good.
I know. Job. All I wanted to do was like do stupid jokes. And now I'm like, oh, God damn it. I'm like an important person. I don't want that. I want zero responsibility in comedy. Like, I don't know why I set off to do this when like all I want to do is write stupid jokes about plant stores.
Yeah, but maybe the, I don't know. It's like exactly the way you're envisioning kind of talking about a thing that people literally can't talk about at all.
Yeah.
You're talking about it for 8 minutes, it makes Fox News. I mean, all of this is important. It doesn't have to be some sort of perfect legislative anything. Yes. It's your art. It's your fucking opinion. And that's the point overall. Like, in and of itself, you're killing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I already did. I mean, that's why there's a show.
You did it. That's great.
But yeah, it's been going really well. It's been really fun and exciting. And people are very, it's like every single show, at least one person DMs me afterwards. And it's like, I had an abortion. And I'm like, I love that. I love that people like feel compelled to tell me that. No one has to. There's no pressure to. I'm not checking on the way out. And it's like, and you? did you have one?
But it is that kind of thing where it's like, it's so highly sensitive and yet insanely commonplace. Like there's such a cultural lie about where it's this kind of like the forbidden thing that happens to fallen women or something. It's like, hey, guess what? It's 2022. Probably everybody you know has had some interaction with this situation, with this medical procedure. Let's get honest.
One in three or one in four women, depending on the statistic you read, like it's a lot of fucking people. It's just a lot of people. It's hard to believe that those would all be, you know, poor 18-year-olds who like never got their shit together. Like, no, it's all kinds of different, you know, people. And I love those threads that I see where people who perform abortions are like, here's all the different kinds of people that have come in for an abortion. A married woman with six kids, an unmarried woman on her way to a PhD program, an 18-year-old who, there's just like every person you could imagine has had to deal with this. So it's just a people issue.
The thing that I kept retweeting and then I'm like, I'm just, all the people I'm talking to agree with me and probably know this already.
Yeah,
but it's like the 7 or 8 out of 10 Americans support abortion, like the vast majority.
Yes.
So we are absolutely, what we're really talking about in terms of what's happening with legislation is we're talking about fascism setting its teeth right into this country.
Yeah.
Because that's, it's actually very symbolic. They're using law from the time of when they used to prosecute witches. Like,
yes.
What in the living fuck are we allowing to happen with this minority right that's going insane? It's crazy.
It's so crazy. It truly feels like not being on this planet. I'm like, this can't be real. This can't be really what's happening in the United States. Like, but here we are in hell.
Yeah, it's true. Hi, welcome.
Hi, welcome to hell.
Can I recommend Chris's EDM festival?
Right. The alternatives are like a beautiful EDM festival where everyone's microdosing ketamine and exploring the way that they love each other, or just complete restriction of people's reproductive rights. That's America right now.
Not people's.
Yeah.
Just women's.
Right.
Men are absolutely fine.
Do whatever they want with their bodies.
Everything all the time, please. And we'll make more pills to make it so that the older you get,
The more women you can fuck.
I know.
A different topic, if I could pivot, because I have a question. Karen,
please.
You just said that you were, before we got on, that you're new to kombucha. What flavors, like, I know that you just took a sip of one. What flavor is, like, working for you? I have some thoughts.
You have no right to ask me this.
That's very personal.
I think the Supreme Court told me that you have no privacy anymore.
You're like, actually, I have it right here. Alito says that you have to report every beverage that you have to me. So I'll do a wide swath answer,
please,
and then narrow.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to stop. Like, how can I stop making bad decisions in the moment? Because I'm only ever at my house working and stressing out, essentially.
Yes,
like, how do people do it and do it so well here in Los Angeles without only eating, like, fucking nettles all day long? Because that's what it seems like to me.
Yes.
So I was reading stuff about, like, the gut biome and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, just if the aim is, like, trying to get a healthy gut biome going, because I know like, my big thing is sugar. So if you have a ton of sugar in your system, you crave more sugar.
Interesting.
So
okay.
It's this, right? So it's just the trying to remove some stuff and then trying to, like, clean it out.
Yes.
I don't know. And that's the long answer. The short answer is, like, all my beautiful yoga friends always have one of these in their hand. So I'm like, fine, that'll be my thing too.
Right.
Because I don't know.
Yeah. I'm trying to kick, or at least, like, reduce my Diet Coke habit, which is, I would say, out of control. We have, like, pallets of Diet Coke at the theater, just, like, under every piece of furniture in the green room, because, like, we can't, and, like, everybody that, like, is working on this with me similarly is addicted. And I'm like, guys, we got to do something. This can't go on. And yet I've done nothing. But, like, I try and use, like, kombucha as, like, oh, when you're craving something like that, like, maybe the answer is something more like kombucha. And I like it. I act like it's Drano and, like, one of them just, like, changes everything, and it's not the case at all.
It's not the case at all. But, like, so this one's golden pineapple, which I just kind of was like, oh, that seems like I would like it at least more than whatever the last one I had. It was, Chris, did we do a dinar that day? I know I recorded a podcast where I took a sip and went, oh, today's the day this kombucha expires.
Oh.
And it was like, whatever I'm doing, this is not responsible. And I could actually be causing a whole new set of problems with, like, rotten fermented mushroom drink.
It's just giving you more positive bacteria. It's fine.
Think so?
It's the good kind of bacteria.
It didn't taste good.
Sure.
No.
I know. That's the hard thing about kombucha. It's actually kind of hard to know when it's gone because it's like slimy and weird.
Yeah. That's the bottom. It's hard.
Yeah. I kind of stick with just, like, the lemon ginger varieties.
Yeah.
I find the other stuff gets real sweet for me. And, like, I'm not, if it's not chemicals, like, I just want, like, water or sparkling water.
Yes. So, my answer is the Gingerade kombucha.
Yeah. I like the Health Aid brand. I don't know. They're all so expensive and stupid, but it's the squatter size bottle. Like, it's shorter.
Yes.
And wider. It's like a barrel that perhaps a St. Bernard would have around his neck. and they do a good lemon ginger and a cayenne cleanse, which I always am like, this is medicine. And it's like, it's not. It's truly just a drink. But sure, if you want to hurt yourself while you're drinking, just go for it.
It's going to be painful.
It's going to be painful.
I thought you were describing one time during quarantine, I ordered 2 bottles of kombucha, but I didn't look at how big they were.
And
they were gigantic. And I was just like, I barely drink the ones I buy. Like, how am I going to ever finish? It was so hilarious. They were in my refrigerator for a very long time.
The one brand does like truly growler sized bottles. And like, to me, I'm like, the appeal is when you first open it and it's super fizzy, because it's, for me, a soda replacement.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea of having a big one that you're drinking like over the course of several days or the week, I just am like, it's so flat. Yeah. It's already not great. I mean, I drink them all the time, but.
Yes. And do you think, do you see improvements in any areas, do you think?
I do think that it does like do some gut and digestion regulation. It's like hard to say if it does a ton, because I feel like usually when I get a kombucha, either I'm like trying to solve a problem or right. like
this will do it.
Or I'm like already kind of on a little like healthy kick where I'm like, I had a green juice, I ate a salad, I'm getting a kombucha. Like I'm trying to be a different person.
Yeah.
So it's like hard to measure if those are like effective. There's no control. I do think that there's like some, even if there's just like placebo effect, like mental benefits of like, I'm making good choices and therefore, like, remember they used to have those commercials that was a side-by-side. I think it was for like, obviously something that was not actually healthy, like a Nutri-Grain bar or something like that. But it was like somebody on one side, it was like two different like point of view people's days. And one person grabs like this healthy thing and the other person has like a donut. And then it's like how every decision they make during the rest of the day, like, to watch TV instead of work out, a salad instead of pizza, like those things. And it's like what it does during the day. I do think that there's like a real, that is a real thing.
Yeah.
So like if I have a kombucha, maybe I'm less likely to have a tall boy diet Coke later.
It's just a step in the momentum.
When
I lived with Tig, she was always had probiotics, which is a intense version of what kombucha does, like refrigerated bacteria that you take as a supplement. And because she always had gut problems.
Totally.
And like after I had surgery and your whole body needs to reline its stomach, I took those probiotics and I felt great. Like I could tell my system, you would think I'd learn a lesson and then regularly take them. But
yeah, no,
I'm a big fan.
I mean,
probiotics.
I'm very fascinated by the gut mind, right? That whole discovery where it's like, that's what instinct is and all these things, but our guts are all fucked up because we're eating crazy man-made corn and shit, whatever is the blame. I made that up.
Man-made
corn.
I love it.
This is why I have to be gluten-free. Just weird made-up shit. But it's like that idea that if I could, because a couple times I've quit sugar, quit flour, I feel amazing. The difference is amazing, whatever. Yeah. And it's just like, but it doesn't matter because it's so hard to stay on.
Yeah, someone's going to bring pizza.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm going to dive into it like Scrooge McDuck.
You got to.
Yep. Yeah, Monday to Wednesday, it's easy to have those kinds of diets.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thursday rolls around and you're like, well, now I'm out.
Now we're back to the great mac and cheese quandary, which is like, it's just don't order it.
I got into such a thing during like the beginning of the pandemic where like, because every time I ordered out, it was very specifically a treat because otherwise I cooked everything. And I was just like, once a week or once every other week, you like support a restaurant and you order and get whatever you want. And now like, that's how I order food. And I'm like, okay, but like now this is like just a regular dinner, but like you just don't have time to cook. Like you don't need to order cake. Like it's just not part of the meal.
Trying to support this Subway or
this
whatever.
Struggling Cheesecake Factory.
Yes. Please buy one of our cheesecakes and keep us in business. Okay. If I have to.
Yes. I mean, I'm just trying to be a good person.
Fine with me. Yeah. I do love that. The thing I actually always say to myself is like, it'll be a restaurant that's completely serves other stuff. But then if you go into the sides area, everybody's got a mac and cheese, some kind of fancy version of mac and cheese where I'm like, well, I haven't had this kind yet. And I absolutely, the voice is trying to convince actual me like that I've never tried mac and cheese where it's like, you know what this is going to be. It's very simple. Yeah, it is not.
Even
it's like,
Sage, there's this vegan place by my house and they serve like fried mac and cheese balls, but it's not real cheese. So I juggle them into my mouth like it's the end of the world.
Yes. The like trick that I play on myself when things are plant-based or whatever other like what seemingly is healthy from a dietary standpoint. Right. I'm just like an Impossible Burger like is so good in so many ways for all of the things it does, but like it's super high in fat and sodium in the way that beef is. Like that's not the solve. Like,
Right. More sodium. It's just
so like again with like vegan food too. Like I remember my friend used to live near a place in Chelsea and we would get their like vegan BLT, which was like ciabatta bread and like a big piece of fried tofu and then tempeh bacon and this like Chipotle, like vegan aioli. And we were just like, oh my God, this is so great. And it's healthy. And they were like, well, it's not healthy. I mean, it's still fried. Like, there's like multiple fried things on that sandwich. They're just not like animals.
Yeah.
It's
hard. One thing at a time. It's-
Because Diet Coke is the same way where, and I do that anytime I have an office job, Diet Coke becomes a huge problem or like a huge, sorry, that dog's just going to bark.
I mean, that's
just
like,
he's just going to bark.
I doubt it's picking up on the mic. It's just Zoom barks.
Zoom barks.
It's like my dog knows like a certain amount of time passes. And he's like, enough with the door being closed. Like, if you're not going to have me in your life, then you're going to remember that I'm out here by myself. Frank!
Okay. Just wanted to know you were okay in there. Just checking on you. One last bark.
He's like, oh, sorry, you're on a call. I didn't realize.
No, just, oh, my mistake. Sorry. But I was just going to say, it is weird how addictive Diet Coke can be in that way where getting me through, it's like the gap between 11 and 1:30, then the gap between 3 and 5, then the gap between where then you go to a restaurant. It's like, oh, fountain Diet Coke. Like I've never had a Diet Coke before.
Right. It's like I've been to a restaurant that has a fountain machine before. Like I know what it tastes like. It's okay to not get I get in phases where like, especially like when I'm in jobs or going to a place every day for something, I guess that's what work is, but you know what I mean? where I'm like, oh, I can't have a meal without it. Like I can't have my lunch without it. Or if I'm going to have a snack later in the day, I'm like, well, I'm going to get, and then like, it's like, just have a fucking coffee. Like just have a cup of coffee. Like that's fine. That's way better. I mean,
I randomly had a desk at this action sports show I was working on, and there was a Red Bull tiny dorm-sized refrigerator next to my desk, and I would just, without even thinking about it, I would just reach over, and I probably had 5 or 6 a day. Heart palpitations. Wow. And I was getting arthritic. I really think it was my joints hurt. Crack another Red Bull.
Crack.
I've never been a Red Bull person. And I'm like, I get on a hot, I'm like, I've never had those drinks. It's like, I am mainlining 6 Diet Cokes during the day. There is no high horse to climb on in this race. But I, for some reason, like get that way. But I have never, it's just a different chemical. I like other chemicals.
And it just happened to be literally within arm's reach. And I'm like, well, I got to keep working. I'll have one of these jittery sodas.
At my last like in-person fancy like TV job, my office was like directly across from the kitchen, and they stocked like, it was an Amazon show. They stocked fucking everything for us. Yeah. Probably shipped via Amazon. It was probably just a cycle of closed loop profit. But it was like, so like every time I got up to go to the bathroom, I was in the kitchen. Like it was just where I was. And so I was like, oh, well, there's like stuff here. And they would get everything for us. And it was so devastating. Yes. But that fridge was full of Diet Coke and I drank almost all of them.
Was this Miss Maisel, marvelous Miss Maisel show? I really liked that show. You wrote on it and you're like a producer of it, right?
Yeah, I was a co-producer last year for season 4 and then was writing on it for 3 and 4. And it was
I really like that show.
Very fun. Such a huge loss when we went to Zoom rooms. I really missed room snacks.
The snacks. I thought you were going to be like, the camaraderie.
No. The access to unlimited free treats. That would be the thing that I missed.
You know what gets me every time? Those fucking, why do they need to put Famous Amos cookies in those little chip bags? Like, no one needs that.
I know.
Every time I'd look at it, I'd be like, fine, but I swear to God, I don't really want this. But like, that is the most satisfying in terms of a snack.
Yes.
Useless / satisfying office snack.
They had like a bodega's amount of food in our kitchen. Like it was just like every, and they would be like, oh, we're trying this new like popcorn. And we've got this new, like, it was just like, you know, obviously there was no end to the budget for that show, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So it was just like, there was like, you know, they had healthy, they had like fruits and vegetables and stuff in the fridge, but then they also had just like every chip I've ever heard of. And like, you could request like, hey, I tried one of these like a few weeks ago somewhere. Can you get me a bag of them? They would get like fresh Rice Krispie treats. I was like, this place is hell. I gained like 20 pounds when I was working there.
Yes.
Every room has like a weight fluctuation.
And there was snack runners on hand.
Yes, truly. I know. I was this is too much. This is too, we're living in Caligula's castle here. It's just.
You're just typing and someone's shoving it in your mouth as you were.
Oh, a 7-layer fudge bar. Like,
yes.
It is the more successful the show, the more intense the craft service gets because they have the money and some people have the time. And it's just like, this is your, I'll never forget my friend. This was, I think, late 90s, got cast on a show and it was on the Warner Brothers lot. And I went to watch, watch them. Yeah, exactly. And she walked up to the craft service area and there was a, what looked like a big mechanics, almost like this big cabinet, but of drawers, but like silver and tall and on roller wheels.
Uh-huh.
And when she opened the drawers, each drawer individually, it was filled with different types of candy bars. And I was just like, this is what it's like. Like the 5-year-old in me is like, we have to get a TV show job immediately.
Yes. And like, I had come to Maisel from like almost exclusively Comedy Central jobs. So where they're like, you're going to get one goldfish packet. You all share it and say thank you. And they're like, and that just bankrupted Viacom, so.
Please pass the goldfish.
So, like, I was already like, wow. Like, and we're, you know, like, you're getting lunch. There's, like, so many snacks. And then, like, I had never, like, once we went into production and there was Crafty, the first day there was a fucking raw bar.
Oh, shit. Crafty.
I got, like, a lobster tail.
Yes.
Wow.
I think that was public. I feel like I posted photos of it. Whatever. Who cares? I don't work there anymore.
Well, and also that is what starts to happen because everybody's making more money.
Yeah.
And then that's part of the flex of we actually did the thing everyone's trying to do and failing at, which is get a show to go for more than one season. It's the reward.
Yes, which is all anybody could possibly dream of right now. I can't imagine working on something that goes more than 10 episodes.
Yeah. No, it's like, a huge accomplishment.
Just like even doing my like theater show, I'm like, this is like more viable than any television show that I worked in late night cable. Like,
yeah.
It's so crazy. Oh, TV.
It's so crazy.
What is TV anymore?
I know. So you don't work there. Now you're like, you're back trotting the boards. You're trying to break into Broadway.
Yes, I'm trying to, I'd love to be the lead in Hamilton if they would just give me a show I've never seen. So.
Just start wearing a powdered wig.
Yes, that's a good idea. Yeah. I should just start wearing a powdered wig.
Just manifest. Oh my God, add a powdered wig. This is how your show's going to change this week. And people keep asking you.
But everything else stays exactly the same. They're like, she made some interesting artistic choices. Mostly the powder, almost exclusively the powdered wig.
Never addressing it.
No. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but I'm not. I just did a season of Teenage Euthanasia, Alyssa Nutting and Allison Levy cartoon on Adult Swim. Just writing on that. And now I'm just kind of like diving back into like performance mode while I do this for a while, which is kind of like a nice change of pace from Zoom rooms, which have been obviously, I mean, I'm sure like everyone's going to get COVID now. So like there's that, but you know, whatever, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. It's been a nice little vacation in between variants.
Yes. Yeah. We get to take our breaks.
Have you missed live performance?
So much.
Yeah.
I had missed it so much. I really like, there was a period of time where I was like, I guess I could like live without that. Like it's kind of nice to just be home. But then, like, I got antsy, like, week three of lockdown and was like, this is absolute pure hell. Yeah. And then, like, and it's been, like, kind of learning, you know, I guess what people call balance in your life. Mm-hmm. I've learned a little bit about that. So, like, I've been like, oh, I don't have to say yes to, like, a bar show in Brooklyn on a Monday at 10. I don't have to say yes to that. Like,
yeah.
Or Brooklyn, Bushwick. I live in Brooklyn, but, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah.
That you can just kind of be like, oh, I'm going to perform on my terms, which like feels, and now I'm like doing this show, like it's 7 shows a week, it's 6 nights. And I'm just like, wow, this is a real job, isn't it? This is not just like fuck around comedy. This is like a real show up and do your stupid show.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've
so
always,
exciting.
I've always said I need to learn to start saying no to shit, but I almost said no to this life-changing festival and I'm glad I didn't. So I don't know when to say yes or no.
It's so
hard.
Yes,
you do.
I'm learning.
You just have to do it decision by decision. That's the
thing. Right.
You can't know it all in one moment. And also you can be wrong. So I think it's like, it's that thing where I love the idea that you get to do, Allison, like a stand-up theater show. Because it's almost like a refinement of something you've already crafted and worked on for a long time.
Yes.
And it is that thing of just like, what are all the different versions of the thing I do that I can explore? Because that's the, to me, that's like really satisfying. And I just, to me, I just fucking love the theater. New York.
Me too.
You're off Broadway in New York?
Yeah.
What's up? High five.
Just like, cute little theater in the West Village. It like attracts like comedy crowd, but also a theater crowd. So it's just like the audiences are smart. I don't have to sit around with like a bunch of comics I don't know or like before the show starts.
Right.
You know, you get there and you're like, oh, this asshole, what's his name again? You know, it's always that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, hey man, how's it going? He's like, you know. And I'm like, God, this sucks. So it's just like, me and my little crew and, you know, it's a nice, and then we drink all of the Diet Coke and then I go on stage and I'm just like high on Diet Coke and it's lovely.
Yes. It's all on your terms. You're staring into that Broadway mirror with the light bulbs all around, just staring into your own face, drinking Diet
just
Coke.
Just drinking
in the
Diet
mirror.
Coke and looking myself in the eye. Being like, it's okay. It's good for you. The word diet's in it.
And then slowly you lower the powdered wig onto your head and you're like, and I'm ready for
and
my
like,
entrance.
And they're like, Allison, five? And you're like, thank you, five. And then
and then you start rapping.
If I could write an abortion rap show, I'd really be...
I hope at the end of this, there's at least a couple hip hop numbers.
Please. I would expect that by the end of 6 weeks, I'll have a handful of those. It'd be weird if I didn't.
Please allow for the 10-minute freestyle portion at the end of your show so you can build that act.
Take suggestions. And your show, I don't think we've said the name of your show yet. Mm. Oh God!
It's called Oh God, a show about abortion.
Which I love that title.
So good. It used to when I was just running it around town, like at Union Hall, and just kind of like at other spots in New York. I used to call it Oh God, an hour about abortion because it was an hour show, and the idea, of course, with the tone of the title being like, Oh God, no one wants to hear this, and then it's like kind of a very light touch.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's disarming to name it that. It's attractive to name it that.
When it went to the theater, I was like, oh God, are they going to make me change the title? Because like, that's a big word to put on the front of a marquee and every like, just,
oh,
you know,
God.
Like, and they were like, yeah, there's a word we need to change. And I was like, here we go. Abortion can't be in it. And they were like, so the word hour? And I was like, that's the problem.
You're like, cut it. It's
like,
no problem.
Lose it. I don't care. Call it a show. I don't care.
Technically,
they were just like,
you clocked in at 75 minutes.
They were like, hour is just very stand-up-y. And we want to make sure that this is not like exclusive to the stand-up crowd. And I was like, an abortion. They were like, yeah, it's great.
What
we love
a relief.
It.
Oh, that's
I was
great.
Like, phew.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, go if you are in the New York or Tri-State area, please go to the Cherry Orchard Theater.
Cherry
Is that
Lane.
Right?
Cherry Lane.
Cherry Lane.
The Cherry Orchard is a play that would be at Cherry Lane.
And orchards have lanes of trees. I understand
that.
Oh,
true. Oh, all right, cool. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I like. Sure. I was reaching.
And you're running through, just because this might,
sure.
Someone might listen to this.
It's already open, obviously, through June 4th for now. And then, you know, a fingers crossed for an extension or a second run or something like that. So
amazing.
I'm sure this will be still topical every single day.
Yeah. I imagine.
So hopefully people will come see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. It was great to talk to you.
This was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we should all microdose ketamine together in the desert.
Yeah.
Chris will find us a field.
I'm telling you. I want to do ketamine with everyone. Listen.
I have a cheetah print hat with bunny ears. Should I bring it?
Oh, yeah. You got to have ears. Choose your animal and let's go to a field.
Perfect.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR!
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, follow, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget, you can listen to new episodes 1 week early on Amazon Music or early and ad-free by subscribing to Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Honk, honk.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the ExactlyRightStore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.